Check, check, check. There you go. You're good.
Hello.
Are we on? I think we're on.
How do we sound?
Everybody sounds good.
Yeah.
Hold up.
All right. Watch your levels. Make sure you don't come in too high.
I watch them on this. This is what I watch them on. This is the outgoing.
All right.
So I think I got them all set. But
let's dive into it. I might need a Xanax for this one.
But our children like to mess with the sound here. And they think it's a toy.
So Tara's here. Last you heard from her, it was from Kindergarten to Cancer, which was like episode 10. That was a long time ago. It's been a minute.
It has been.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
We're excited to have you here.
Thanks, bestie.
So we're closing out the RSO story. Tara and John, as you know, are my major caretakers.
The final chapter.
While we were going through RSO, I think that the two of you have known one another for a long time.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think this put a serious strain on your relationship.
A strain on our relationship? Why would it put a strain on our relationship?
Because it was a really stressful and difficult time, and you two are both the closest to me, and you both think you know what's best for me, which is true. You've both known me a long time. You think you know what's best for me, and you think you know what's best for me.
I do not think
And
I
sometimes
know what's
you
best.
Have a difference of opinion, and that's okay. I just think it's important to touch on that, and it's okay to talk about, because I want people to understand that if you want to try this treatment, whoever's going to be really close to you is going to be under an insane amount of stress. Tara was getting phone calls for me at what, 5 a.m. every day?
About 5 a.m. every day.
Well, let's take it back.
Okay.
Let's take it from the beginning where we left off last time.
Yeah,
we left off last time, March 8th. We kind of go to sleep with you and your. You've been up for like 3 days straight, not sleeping, breathing heavy all night, talking to yourself. I'm not sleeping next to you. We're locking the bedroom door at night, and while our kids are sleeping in the hallway, and I kind of wake up at 6 a.m. to you tell me Dean has his wings.
Yeah.
That's where we left off last time.
Good times.
In a panic, I wake up, run in his room to make sure he's okay, because that's something that the first thing you think about, because you're not all there. He was fine. He was great.
I mean, he metaphorically had his wings, because he's an angel. It was a metaphor.
I know, but for somebody who doesn't have their, you know, who hasn't slept in days,
yeah,
it's hard. I immediately went in his room. Made sure he was okay. I went in the other kids' rooms, made sure they were okay. I started getting them dressed. I called Tara. I said, I think we need to go to like a doctor today. I need you guys to keep her on the phone so I can get these kids to school. Because I was worried about you running away and leaving the house. That sound about right?
Sounds about right.
Right.
Yeah.
And I Tara called, I guess, Blair. Blair called Allison. There was like this three-way, like, partnership to keep you on the phone.
Correct.
And keep you like talking until I could get back. It's like a 45-minute round trip for me to get two kids to one school and drop another one off at another school. Yeah. So I put them in the car. I'm like, oh, just stay on the phone with Tara. She's going to talk you through this. Like, I got to get these kids out of here. I don't want them exposed to it. We get in the car. We start. Like, it's hard because, like, I'm sitting there. It was honestly one of the most, like, it was like an action movie. I'm driving like as fast as I can with kids in the car, like counting down the minutes because I got to get back to you, worried about what you're going to do.
Yep.
Like what you're going to do to yourself, or at least there's no kids in the house. So I like, you know, I dropped the first two off at school. All right, great. Awesome. I'm like, all right, got to get Bradley in. Sitting there in the car line for Bradley.
The car line is so long. So long.
Right. The Ring camera goes off. I'm like, oh, fuck. Could be anything, right? This is March 9th. Could be anything. No, it's you. You're out front. You're in what?
Jeans and a sports bra.
Jeans and a sports bra.
With multiple sweatshirts in my hands.
Blair calls me. I can't keep her on the phone. I don't know what she's doing.
I kept hanging up on Blair. She was FaceTiming me. Kristen, what are you doing? What are you doing?
She's calling me. Allison's texting me. Tara's texting me. I got this little boy in the back seat trying to go to school. I'm sitting there patiently like, holy fuck. I drop him off. I get it. Like they open the car line, whatever. I drop him off. I'm watching you on the Ring camera. I got a note from the principal afterwards that I peeled out of the parking lot in the middle of car line. right, in your car. Probably hit like 110 miles an hour on every road back to our house, going around people, going through stop signs. Like, my fear was that you're going to get in a car, like an Uber, and I'm never going to know where you went.
Oh my God.
Like, that's my, that's what's going through my head. Cause you're so not there. That's what I'm thinking. Like, she's going to get in a fucking Uber. I'm not going to know where she is. I'm going to have to get police involved. This is going to spiral into a much bigger situation than it needs to be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It did. Like, I'm watching on the, our next door neighbor, Jen.
DeMay,
I texted her. I'm like, can you go out front and just talk to Kristen until I get there?
Run interference.
Can, would you mind terribly? She's like, yeah, she's out front in a sports bra. I'll go out there. It doesn't see. I was like, yeah, it's not right.
Yeah.
I pull up. He refused to go back in the house.
Yep.
With me. Jen is like, it's okay, Kristen. Like, what's wrong? Like, everything's fine. Once again, like, this looks like I'm an abusive man. Everything's fine. She'll be fine. So I put you over my shoulder and I took you in the house.
Yep.
At which point you had a weapon.
Not a weapon. A Nerf bullet.
It was not a Nerf bullet.
It was a Nerf bullet.
It was a stake that you, Tara, you want to back me up on this? She's shaking her head. But yeah,
it was like a stake.
It's
like
one of those stakes you put in like a, one of those tents for like a kid's toy.
Correct.
But you had it in your pocket, and I didn't know because you were paranoid. So no big deal.
So paranoid.
I disarmed you.
On
the floor in the laundry room because like you tried to stab me with it. So I grabbed your hand and I just disarmed you.
Because I wanted to do what I wanted to do, and I
I understand. But
I was on a different. If you've ever watched, what's that show with the kids where the little boy goes to the upside down? What's that show on Netflix?
Stranger Things?
Stranger Things. I was in the upside down. I was in an alternate universe. I was not making sense.
Right.
Nothing was making sense to me. Reality had changed as I knew it. I thought that there was an underground railroad being built under my house.
Hold on.
I thought that John moved the house. What's wrong?
And we're good. It just didn't look like it was recording.
I thought that aliens were trying to suck me out of the ceiling in my house. I thought the FBI was in the ceiling. Sorry, I'll let you talk now.
No, I mean, pretty accurate. So there had been things that were leading up to this point that I knew things weren't right. So yes, I was getting 5 a.m. calls for about over probably 2 weeks straight at erratic times. And at first they were things that seemed okay, like you were into spirituality and blocked chakras and... all of your fat deposits was evil and the devil, and you were processing all these emotions, and you would go back to these memories, even these memories that I don't even know how you were getting back to these memories, but I would remember them when you brought them up. But then it started getting to the point where it was, okay, I could handle the calls. That wasn't the challenge, but the logic was really, really extreme. So it wasn't like, hey, this is a funny person that's high anymore. This was like, you're cured. There's no such thing as ADD. There's no such thing as dementia anymore. Everybody's going to stop their meds. You figured out how to cure these things. You're going to be on a TED Talk on stage getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
In sandals and like a handmade like outfit.
correct. At some point you told me you were giving up your Gucci bags. I was like, I will take those, please, and thank you.
Yep.
But it started getting really erratic. And it was around the time that Nicole did go away. And she would often be like a good balancing point. Her and Corey were very good balancing points for me because me and John think a little bit alike, but Nicole is extremely laid back and she does have a really kind of like open ability about processing information in a different way than I do. And Corey's the same way. He would give me a flip alternative when I came in with like, this is crazy. This is not Kristen. And he'd be like, well, maybe this is where she is, or maybe this is what she's thinking.
Yeah.
So for the weeks leading up to that, it was like, okay, erratic. I still didn't think it was normal, but right before that, it got really, really erratic.
That week, leading up to that day of March 9th, it just like all came kind of crashing down.
Yeah. So when John calls me at 6:30 a.m., I'm like, okay, this is serious. I'm about to go into a major presentation at work, and I got to figure out how to balance this. So I text Allison and Blair, and I'm like, we got it. We got to trifecta this. But Kristen did want to only talk to me at the time, so she kept hanging up on other people throughout the process. And then finally, I was on the call with you. So everything that went down while John is getting her back in the house. I'm actually on the phone, phone listening to all this. So my presentation's blown up at this point. I'm like, please, hopefully they accept all of my apologies.
I'm so sorry.
I jump in the car and I drive over. And the scene I walk into, I can't even explain it.
Because, I'm like, I need you to get over here because I, like, she won't listen to me.
She didn't trust. There was a complete lack of trust at this point in time for anything John was going to say.
She was like a blank person, though. Like, it's like you're looking at her, but it's not her. And it's like she's not the person you know.
It's like a horror movie where somebody came in and took over somebody's body. And you're like, definitely. This is not you anymore.
Yeah.
When you talked about mental health in the last episode, I'm like, this must be what people with different, like, that bipolar split personalities, this
100%.
Must be what it's like because I couldn't find Kristen anymore, right?
Yeah.
And it was scary because it was so erratic.
She was gone. Gone. Like, the Kristen that we know today and gone, the Kristen girl. That we have known our whole...
For gone, poor, great, girl.
Yeah, like, sad, like, crazy, but that's a stressful part.
Silver lining. I can somehow relate to my mom better now with her dementia. Like, I kind of know where she's at when she comes back with a crazy answer or doesn't know where she is. It takes me back to that place, which is probably not a good thing, but at least I can kind of understand her more than my other family members right now.
Yeah.
Silver lining.
And I think when you talk about like the strain, it really was survival mode. So it was just 100%. Pure stress on me and John and survival mode. And I did become a bit of a security blanket for you. So I'm getting calls at 11 o'clock at night saying, hey, Terry, you got to come over. Like, I can't. And John couldn't. He had three little boys and I got it. And I would show up the minute, you know, anyone asked, and I would make sure other people could come take you for walks or do whatever during that time. But he had three little boys to keep safe, too. So you really were not safe for yourself or anyone around you. It was survival mode, I think, for everybody.
In all honesty, like, so we moved the kids out of the house for about a week. That was hard in a lot of ways. they went live with their mom and dad. They went live with my sister. Like, it's sad.
Sorry.
Like,
yeah, but, I'm sorry.
But you weren't safe. So, like, you know, that was hard. Those weeks after, went to doctors. No one could help us. There's nothing we can do. It's got to get out. It's saturated in her liver, and this is what it looks like. Like, I had to live with a shell of you. Not even a shell. Like, honestly, like, she wasn't her for probably 2 to 3 months after.
It took some time.
I was sitting there at night, and I would say to Tara sometimes, like, I don't know if she's ever coming back. And that was the scariest part. Like, I was like, I don't know if, like, we tried this thing, and I don't know if she's ever coming back from it. Like, and that was a sad, like... We tried this to beat cancer, and I didn't know if you were ever going to come back, and this is what the rest of your life was going to look like.
Yeah, can you imagine? It was really traumatic, honestly, to think about losing you in that way. Like, we had already thought about cancer, and while I don't think any of us are always processing what that road completely looks like, because we tend to live in the optimism, and we like to live there, right? I think some people, you will say we're shoving our feelings in our shoes, but I think we're just resilient, and we're figuring out the way to continue to be positive, because that is a lot of the battle in this world.
It is.
But to think about losing you mentally in that capacity was really hard. Like, I mean, I'd have to come over and we would stand up back and sing every song under the sun and have to do cheerleading routines from like first grade that we would remember. And it was, you know, it was just so erratic. Like, even if we took you somewhere, it was like, okay, what is going to happen in this moment? Like, what are you going to do in this moment? It was not our relationship with you, right?
So like, shout out to you guys and your support staff. Like, you reached out to all the friends and everybody. Like, people would come on the weekends, take her out. Like,
well, because I knew you needed a break.
Because I'm dealing with,
I'm breaking. I knew you needed a break. So it was like, how can we help in little ways? Mm-hmm. And it was also good to get other data points, because I felt like John was really in the thick of it. I was probably next really in the thick of it with Trotter. And sometimes you're not sure because you're
too
sleep deprived and you're so close and
close to the situation. You need like an outside perspective.
You're critical. Yeah. You're watching it hyper focused, right? Yeah. So I wanted other people to be like, are we seeing this the right way? And I won't forget, I actually called my uncle who he deals with the police force trauma, drug addiction. And it was that actually gave me some hope, because he said, you really have no way out of this but for this to burn out of her system.
Yeah.
And you can't take her to a mental place because, first of all, they're not great places, but also she doesn't fit Yeah. She's not a
I would
drug
never
addict.
Do that to her. Like, I know, but like they may have taken her, they may not have, but I was like, I'm not doing that to my wife. I'm sorry.
No,
like, I'm
but not, they, yeah, like, there was nothing. There was no drug addict. We couldn't admit you to a hospital. All they were going to give you was an IV bag. There was nothing else they could do.
Yeah.
So we were just stuck.
I had my own detox center here for, you know, a couple months.
Yeah. Yeah. So the day was crazy, but I think even the weeks after, it took a while. And it kept being like, are we getting slivers of you back?
Right.
And we would see certain things, but it was a while till it was through your
system. Scary. It was scary. And like, you just, it's scary to like go through because you don't see the person that you know. And that's pretty crazy. So that's the buyer beware of if you're going to do this. This is the real downside. And there's nothing you can do once this gets this far.
Be very careful with your dosage. Be very, very careful. I can't say I don't recommend it because looking at Shauna's story and seeing how she's doing so great still to this day, I can't say don't do it. But for me, it was the wrong treatment.
Yeah, it's...
Wish I would have known that and had a crystal ball going in. But at least now I can look back and say, at least I tried.
Yeah, and where we're at today, if you would have tried this now versus then, I think, you know, it might have been a whole different story as well. But I do think the weight thing, I think, is a good point. Well, you know how I probably always felt about this treatment, but I am also a very science-driven person, and I work in the pharma industry. So that is, you know, a whole nother piece to, like, how I look at these things. But I said, you know, there was ways I support you through this. And the weight thing was an interesting one because you actually, as you were upping your dose, you did gain weight because you were eating
waffles crazy things.
And crazy stuff, like, and you were fun. You were like the stoner you expected.
Like it was a good like 4 weeks there of fun stoner Kristen.
Yeah. And then we went to an appointment and they made a comment about your weight and you stopped eating after that. Yeah. And you lost a significant amount of weight, but you were still going up in your doses. So I think it was like this dynamic. And then you know, you stopped some of your chemo pills, which, you know, that is a piece in your body that's already been kind of sustained. So all these dynamics that happened at once, I think, was a perfect storm.
Yeah.
So here's a good story. Like, I'm going to tell the story about the fire alarm at the CAT scan.
Oh, my God.
This is, honestly, this was the part where I came home that day and I was like, yeah. All right, so... We get through this. We're going to various doctors at this point because Kristen is not who she is. I take her in and Dr. Ali and all the other doctors like that. She is gone. Like, that's not her. I want her to get a CAT scan. We want to check her brain. We want to see everything in her. Like, I'm like, okay, that should be fun. So, you know, when you get a CAT scan, I have to take you there. We're in the middle of a COVID pandemic still. So like, I can go in with you, but like, I can't really. So we get there. The people who you get your CAT scans from know you. I show up with you and they're like, what's wrong with Kristen? They're like, that's not Kristen. Who is that? And I'm like, that's her. They're like, what happened to her? I'm like, I don't know. That's why we're here.
I found her on the side of the road carrying a trash bag full of cans.
So at this point, whenever I have to get in the car with you at this point, you're still very paranoid. Mm-hmm. You sometimes try and like unlock the door and like want to get out. And it's, and I'm like, Jesus Christ. Like, anytime I tried to alleviate getting in a car with you at that point because you wanted to do your own thing and didn't trust where I was taking you or whatever.
I thought you were going to put me in a loony bin.
There was a point where you were like, yeah, you're going to put me away. I'm like, I would never do that to you. Like, just so you know.
Yeah.
But you didn't trust anything. So anyway, we get to the CAT scan and like getting you in there, getting it, like, what am I here for? Why am I doing this? Like, you're questioning everything. I'm like, you've been here a million times. These ladies are saying hi to you. They know you. Like, this is a normal thing for you every 6 months, but like, we're getting one to make sure you're okay. We get into the back. We are next in line. And I'm just like, you're counting the minutes. Like, how much fucking more time to get this done? How can we get this done?
Granted, I'm in this little room after they give you the injection for the dye.
They give you the dye.
And I'm staring at the fire alarm. I'm staring at it on the wall like a creep.
And all of a sudden, the fire alarm goes off. And she's like, I knew something was wrong. What's going on in here? And I'm like, oh, my fucking God.
Like, on the table, like, is this ready real? To get scanned, and the fire alarm goes off. And I was like, I did that with my brain.
Right. And I'm sitting here.
Imagine that.
I'm sitting there, and I'm like, do we really have to leave? It's like, the lady's like, you got to get out of here. You guys got to leave. Like, you got to go out front. She doesn't want to walk out. She refuses to go out because I don't know what's happening out there. So I have to carry her out front of the place. Everyone's staring at me like, why is he carrying this woman? Like, everyone's wearing masks. I'm carrying her. She ends up fainting and falling out front. Like, not falling, but, like, fainting. So I have to, like, because I picked her up and I put her, like, I put her down, like, standing. She ends up fainting. I have to, and then I'm like, I'm taking her back inside in the lobby. I'm sorry. I don't care. The building's not on fire. Like, I'm going back in. And everyone's like, yeah, come back in. So we get her back in. We get the CAT scan. Everything's somewhat fine. I mean, you know, the point of this is that we tried this and it didn't really work. That we'll fast forward to that part when, you know, but
yeah,
I told you that story when I came home.
Well,
and you're
I
like, are you fucking kidding?
And
I sent you the video. And I'm like,
you've got to be kidding me that, you know, we're trying to, I mean, cause I would get calls as you're going to doctor's appointments saying, hey, can you talk to her? She's losing it. She thinks we're either putting her away or we're doing something. So I'd be talking to her on these rides. And so you're always just trying to keep her calm. Like even in as erratic as you know she's being and illogical she's being, you're just trying to make her feel as normal as possible.
Yeah, she doesn't trust wherever we're going and whatever we're
anything.
Doing.
Anything. Yeah. And to be honest, I told her, she actually, sometimes I was like, huh, she might be right or she might have a point or like there were points
you
she
questioned
was so believable.
Yeah.
I was like, I mean, she swore she was being poisoned in the water at one point.
Yeah, I remember that.
She, you know, she definitely thought you were out to get her. She had these, even some of these stories she would go back to. I was like, she might be, maybe she has something. Like, she was believable with some of her, even her illogic. She made logic to it somehow.
Yeah, it's, you're like, maybe she's seeing this through a different perspective and maybe she uncovered something here. I'm like, wait, like.
Maybe she is in a whole nother spiritual awakening.
Right.
We have no idea what it could be like.
Right.
And maybe she really is. And so you would sit there and you'd be like, oh, that's interesting. Some parts of it, you knew, obviously, completely crazy. But yeah, she definitely didn't trust most people. I'll never forget the day that, maybe a few days after everything, I took her out for a walk.
Yeah.
And we're walking around, after the incident, and we're walking around just this little loop and walking around. And she's, you know, when she goes quiet, cause she actually was very vocal. I know she went quiet for you guys, but she would call me all the time. I mean, random hours of the night.
Yeah.
And I would get these just. And I just listened, right? All these tailspins. So when she was going quiet, I'm like, what's going on? Something's going on. What's going on in your hat? What's going on? And she thought she could hear people talking as we're going around the thing. And at one point she told me the dogs are talking because it was a dog park. And I was like, all right, now we haven't hit the spiritual awakening. We're in like a whole nother world. But she would just have these vivid like things happening that in her mind were real.
Right.
And
they got less and less as the weeks and months went on.
Yeah.
Like literally it was the most helpless situation because no one could help you. Every doctor we went to said, you just have to wait it out and you have to deal with this and there's nothing we can give you. We tried every detox drink on the market. You know, everything. Like she probably did a different one every day. And I was like, let's try this detox today. Let's try this one. And, you know, it was a slow, painful road to get back. We had the priest come over. The Monsignor came over and did that seemed to help. They did. I had like a 2-hour talk on the deck one day, those two. And he was like, I don't know what to tell you. Like,
Yeah. And, you know, everybody was looking for, like, you just thought it was going to end.
Yeah.
Right. Like you just thought,
yeah, like, okay, are we back now? We're back. Yeah.
And it wasn't quite like that. So I do think the good point you guys have made is like, I think the weight thing is one thing. Really watch for different signs, right? Of what's kind of okay erratic and not okay erratic. And I can't say I can give you a list because I think we saw points, but when you're going through it, you still don't know.
No.
But I also think that, you know, have in plan if things do go wrong, because the support system that you guys had, you were able to lean into is great, but a lot of people wouldn't have that.
A lot of people wouldn't. Yeah. A lot of people, I mean, this was difficult on a lot of levels to, you know, from family taking your kids for a couple of days to watching them, to taking them to school, to like everybody stepped up and did amazing stuff. We're just blessed to have so many great people in our life. So
yeah,
it's, it's where we're at.
Yeah. What I miss.
Nothing.
You're scared.
Good. No, good. We're just catching it all up to bring it. So, I mean, we get through it. you get back to somewhat normal you sometime in like late April, early May.
No. I was going to say April because around my birthday, I remember you called me and you were definitely still not there, but you were a little better. Like it was like you, it was just like, I was definitely still in the thick of it then. But you seemed a little bit more like just a little bit again, every time a little bit, but I'm going to say it was pretty late into spring.
Yeah. I was saying like late April, early May, like it's before you were like
back for Easter.
Eh, maybe not. It was a weird Easter this year though. I think we did it at home.
It was just back us to work and, by May.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I will pull the paperwork. Right. I was back middle of May. I think I was supposed to go back.
I said late April. Late April. Yeah, you were supposed to go back May 1st. You didn't.
No, I went back on the 15th.
Yeah, I had a talk with your boss. I said, we need a couple more weeks.
Yeah, you thought you were going back. And I was like, you thought you were going back. She cannot go back.
Yeah.
Yet.
And that was a whole thing, too. Like piecing all that together with, your work and your manager and your boss. Like, here's what we got to do. She needs a couple more weeks. Yeah, we're going to need to. But we got you back. Mm-hmm. Back to, are we going to flash forward to where we're at today? What do you want to do? Where do you want to go? Because there's a big gap here between April and today, the night before Thanksgiving, when we're recording this.
Yeah, just the night before Thanksgiving. Usually we would be getting ready to go out and partay, but we're getting ready to go to chemo.
We're doing a different party.
Different party, a chemo party.
Party to kill cancer cells.
Yes. So let's see. We talked about... I moved off of Ibrance probably in March, April.
You stopped taking it.
I want to say I started Zoloda. I started taking Zoloda probably, I think it was April 19th. I think it was on your birthday.
Mm-hmm.
Because the cancer had progressed and the Faslodex wasn't doing what we were hoping with the Ibrance. So we moved to the Zoloda. And in June, we found out it did nothing. It actually made my bones worse. And we found out I had a little lesion on my liver. So we moved off of Zoloda, and then we moved to Halaven chemo. And it was the Halaven that made my bones worse, and my liver looked a little better. Now we're on Abraxane. And I just found out that I do have a PIK3 mutation. It took 3 blood biopsies for it to actually turn up in my blood, which is crazy. So the cancer is continuing to mutate. But at least now I have another line of treatment to try because Dr. Ellie was starting to really stress out. We were getting other opinions and it was, okay, on to the next drug. We're starting to run out of options here. So we're thankful that I can now get on PIQRAY. There's a lot of great data behind it. Let's pray it works because it's supposed to give me at least another 11 to 12 months before I need to jump onto a different type of treatment. So... that's where we're at.
Another depressing, crazy summer.
Yeah.
With a lot of emotional roller coasters, getting through another diagnosis, mm-hmm. another treatment. Mm-hmm. Basically, you're on chemo every week mm-hmm. until you can't take it anymore.
Yep.
Cold capping again.
Just started losing a lot of hair. It's falling out. I still have a lot. I can hide it well.
Stop playing with it. And keep the cold caps on.
Easier said than done.
We're using a new kind of cold cap, a Paxman, which I don't know. I don't know if I love it. I don't know. It seem like you're losing a lot more hair this time than before.
Yeah, but think about it. This chemo is like Adrian Myas, and it's like the Red Devil in terms of it being a taxane, right? Is it a taxane, I think? I'll double check that. But remember with Adrian Myas, and I only had 3 or 4 rounds because I was pregnant with it. Right. And you still grow a lot of hair when you're pregnant. Right. So of course I'm going to lose a lot more this time around. And Dr. Ali warned me, she was like, look, the Penguin cold caps, which we had for a minute, work a lot better, but you have to get the dry ice all the time. It was a pain in the ass. The Paxman's easier because it's just hooked up to a machine.
Yeah. This process is definitely much easier.
It most places have the machine in there. It's like an avatar. You hook the two things together and it does everything for you. You don't need to bring a cooler. You don't need to bring it, but we are losing a lot more hair than normal. Yeah. But you've also been on this since, I want to say, August.
The only real downside for me, I think, is that I can't leave the clinic, the hospital, whatever you want to call it. with this cold cap on because it's attached to a machine.
Yeah, that part sucks. That part sucks because you got to wait. I think it's like another hour and 15 minutes.
Hour after, and a half. 90 minutes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. After you're done. Just to have this thing cool down.
Which is also where I think you start to be like, all right, take it off, I'm done, right?
Yeah.
Because it's...
You want to go. You have something to do. You don't want to sit in that chair any longer. I get it.
Yeah.
It's that's the part. That's like the downside to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Especially now, too, because like we used to snack. I used to eat gummies, all this. But now I'm trying to be really good and I'm trying to fast because the chemo is supposed to be a lot more effective if you fast before chemo. So I'm trying not to eat while I'm in the chair. And we do a good job of keeping ourselves entertained, but... With the brain freeze, it's hard not to chew on something. Maybe I should try gum.
Yeah, we can pick up gum today.
Yeah.
When we play back these months now of how it feels like all of this was so long ago because of so much more that has happened traumatically in the last few months. Mm-hmm. But I'll kind of go back to that statement I said where you kind of always say about, you know, I'm not shoving my feelings in my shoes anymore and all this. But I do think... If you go from like RSO, right, January, the downfall starting, you know, March, but really a little bit earlier, and it going on to almost May, and then June, we get the scan, which doesn't look good. And then that proceeds to go on. We're now running around looking at clinical trials, looking at other options, to another scan that wasn't great, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, honestly, I don't know too many other people that wouldn't be balled up in a corner, not even able to kind of keep marching on and keeping the positivity. So while sometimes I think, and when you were processing a lot of emotions, you thought that this was part of the reason, like these suppressed emotions were the reason cancer happened. I actually think it's your superpower. I really do. I think it's your superpower. And I think that's what John and I were saying during of it, like, this is not you. You're going to get up and you're going to get through this and you're going to keep moving with everything with the RSO. And why I think even at times we felt a little hopeless because we couldn't activate, we still had hope. And it really is. It's your superpower.
I like it.
Your grit and your resiliency.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, it's been quite a 4 years. It's really difficult to describe, but when I tell my story, people are so moved. And for me, it's a little bit shocking because I'm living it every day. And I just wake up and I do my thing. And honestly, maybe it's like a learning disability. Maybe
Who plays you in the movie?
We did do that. We started our movie. So I guess it was after the last scan. We were having a rough day mentally, and we decided this is the climb, right? So every movie has to have rock bottom.
Absolutely.
And there's got to be a climb up because that's what makes it like...
Of course. That's what makes it a good movie.
We're at rock bottom. Yeah. So this is the climb up. So then we talked about who was playing who in the movie, and that was a lot of fun. And just, ways to keep, you know, just fun energy into it because it's not fun, right? That's the reality. It's not.
And I think you manifested that. That's your superpower. I think that you were the one who was like, okay, this is rock bottom for real now. Now it's the climb. And then what happened? Dr. Ali sat me down and she's like, you're never going to believe it. You finally have the PIK3 mutation. 40% of ERPR positive breast cancer patients like me have this PIK3 mutation, and she just kept waiting and waiting and waiting for it. I swear you manifested this.
I'll take credit.
Take credit where credit. That's your superpower. Okay.
Well, no, I mean, and you know, we put on fun rap music on the way home that brought us back to our younger days, and just, you know, again, I think, and a lot of times people will say to me, they think I'm living in a world that probably isn't dealing with the realisticness of what's in front of us. And I don't believe that to be true because I believe if I live in the other world, I'm not enjoying the time I have with you.
Exactly.
Right? So the minute I live in that world for me, you know, and to say I never go there is that would be a lie, but I don't ever stay there. So I say, you know, we can do this for 24 hours. And I'll tell you this, you can be down for 24 hours. Tomorrow we start back. We start with another plan. We get back. We can live here today and tomorrow it's not going to be there because if not, we're wasting our time. And who knows how much time I have left or you have left or anyone has left, right? So I just choose not to live there and choose to keep being positive and finding our next optimistic place and hope. And for us right now, it is, you know, this mutation.
And you're right. It's like we said in the beginning, season one. It's a coaster. It's a roller coaster ride. There's ups, there's downs, there's peaks, there's hills, there's valleys. You're up, you're down, you're in, you're out. You don't know what the hell's going on half the time in your body. And you learn so much about your body, and you're in shock, and you're in pain. And when you're in pain, it's like, oh no, your scans look pretty good. And when you're not in pain and you're feeling great, they're like, oh my God, your scans are trash. So sometimes you're like, what the hell is going on? I think you're right. You got to enjoy whatever time you have left. And if we live in that sad, depressing area, what's the point of living? Right?
True that.
You got to.
Got to keep getting off the mat.
Yes. Get out of bed.
Got to keep getting up.
Every day, and just push forward and focus on the little things, the little happy things, you know, because you never really know what life has in store for you. We just had a friend whose husband passed away. You just had a coworker who passed away from COVID.
Yep.
We almost lost John to COVID over the summertime.
True story.
It's just, it's been, we've been through a lot. And you're right. I think it's.
You had COVID a couple weeks. That's a whole nother episode.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we do a whole episode on that because, you know, a lot of people look at COVID and if you're a cancer patient, I'm like, oh, it's a death sentence. It's this and that. It's not.
No.
It's certainly not ideal.
No.
But, like, it's, you know.
I think cancer and COVID could be a whole nother.
It's a whole nother. That's an episode. Yeah, that's an episode.
You dealt with a lot, and even your decisions that you would make, that a person would make differently, has a whole nother layer into it when it's cancer added onto it. So,
insanity. All the kids got cancer. We all got, oh my God. Oh my God. COVID. Jesus. Did you talk about everything you wanted to mention?
Yeah, I think we don't have to go too far down, honestly. And, a lot of things, I deleted a lot of the text messages. After 30 days, I delete them anyway. And then I got rid of a lot of things. You sent me videos and different things. And I'm sure John has a lot of things. But for me, it's a place I don't really need to go again. Mm. So I think we talked about
it. You don't want to go. Yeah. I think we cover, like, but we got to make sure that if people do RSO, the buyer beware. And this is what you could potentially, you know, I think when we talked about this, we felt that this needed a long, kind of drawn out couple episodes to really paint the picture and lay the foundation for, if you're going to do this, this is our experience. Mm-hmm. And it's not for everybody. And, but we understand that sometimes people get really desperate. And they want to be here as long as they can. You got to try everything. I get it.
I haven't touched weed since. Not once. And it's been almost a year.
Yeah. And with the pain you're in, you know, it's one of those things that's a normal, you know, next step people would try. Mm-hmm. And I think even all of us are like, would hold our breath a little bit too. Cause you're like, is anything
that's
in there
not happening.
That would react right here?
You go live with Tara if you want to do that.
There was a point I tried to take you to live with me too. But, John was like, you've got kids there too. And I don't know what.
Like, I was like, no, even Blair was like, I'll just keep her at my house. I'm like, right.
You don't know what you're signing up for.
Yeah. I was like, it's okay. We'll figure it out. We'll get through it.
I'm sorry. I put you both through such a traumatic episode. I did a speech at St. Norbert's not too long ago for Team Hope, which is like a prayer service, and
she's amazing. She did an amazing job.
Oh, thank you. I had the entire church clap for my parents because I'm like, please give my parents a round of applause because I've really put them through the ringer with a lot that's gone on in the past 4 years. And the two of you too, and Allison and Blair and Janae, so many players, Marianne, just everybody was just amazing throughout everything. Thank you all. I'm so lucky, Trotter, to have such amazing people in my life. Somebody texted me while they were listening to the last episode and said, Trotter's an amazing human being. I can't believe what she's been through just with you.
Yeah.
I'm like, you should hear her life story too, because she's been through some shit.
Yeah, she was definitely the right person. Because she's got a different mindset. She the way her openness to process different, you know, views and kind of activity that was going on was great. At times it was though, like, I'm like, okay, I need somebody else in there that maybe isn't so open-minded to tell me what is going on here.
Yeah.
But she, you know, she could be really calming, which was, I think, huge for the boys too, right? Mm-hmm. To have that kind of factor to it. And that open-mindedness is the type of person you need it. So
she was the right person here at the right time, because her journey and her life of what she's gone through kind of enabled her to handle this with ease, kind of, and not like a lot of people would have been like, I'm not, like I said, I'm not fucking going back there. A lot of people have been like, yeah, I'm good, man. Yeah, we're not coming back. Like, yeah, I get it.
Shout out to Marianne, who drove me around like for half a day. And I'd be like, go to CVS. Let's get my prescription. No, wait, let's go for a walk. Can we go hiking somewhere? And she was probably like, what the hell are you talking about? We went to Green Juice or Clean Juice.
Yeah.
And I was looking at the menu for a good 20 minutes. I couldn't decide. Like, thank you, Marianne. Like when you're you so told
them those were fun.
Oh my God! Yeah, the guac. Tara.
Oh, I remember that.
The extra guac.
I remember that.
We took her to Chipotle where she broke out into a song that was slightly embarrassing, but thank God there was only a few people in there. And then she was like, she had at this point no credit cards because we weren't allowing her to really have much of anything. She couldn't.
Oh, I took her phone.
Everything.
I took her phone. I took her credit cards.
Computer.
I took everything away. Like she was my, 13-year-old daughter that was misbehaving.
Yep.
I did.
Yeah.
So, but,
and she's like, she's paying. Add on all the extras. Add on the extra guac. And then she didn't eat really more than a few bites of it. But yeah, it was an adventure I choose not to ever do again.
Ever going back. So, hopefully. Yeah. We're never going back down that road again. So, but we've been down it, and I will say this, if anybody tries this, goes down the road, you need somebody to talk to, you're more than happy to direct message me or the website or send an email through, because it's lonely and it's really you feel helpless a lot. And it's hard to say that when I had so many people around that were like helping, but at the end of the night, you're sitting here by yourself with someone that you love that you don't know if is ever coming back, and you do feel hopeless. Like, and you feel like you can't go on, and you got to find that strength. So anybody ever needs help or wants to talk about it, I'm happy to help. So yeah.
Being a caretaker in this journey is something you can't prepare for. And then add that adventure into the mix. It's a whole nother level of, honestly, I said trauma and survival, because that is what we were doing during that time, honestly. And I think John is a great resource. Kristen is a great resource as well. She's just so open-minded about things. But that caretaker lens, it's a whole nother lens. It really is.
Yeah. It's a gauntlet, that's for sure. So, all right. So I think we can edit this so it doesn't matter. I think we got enough. I think we got a good.
I think we did too. We got to get her to chemo.
Yeah.
All right.